today in a series of interviews looking at how companies are responding to the crisis caused by COVID-19. Richard and I are speaking with Tony Petra, Executive Vice President of Nielsen Watch. So, Tony, we wanted to start off by getting some sort of idea as to what impact the crisis has had on the TV viewing in across your markets, and perhaps in particular in the US, and to find out whether that the sort of uptake in viewing has been sustained over this period, or whether it's falling off, or how is it panning out?
Yeah. Look, I think like everyone, I mean, viewing is up, you know, 20, 30, 40% in some markets. And of course, it varies by day part. So what we are seeing is huge upticks of viewing during daytime, as you would expect. But even at a total viewing level, sort of, I would say on average, about 20% is up. in fact, the US is closer to 30. Of course, we're also seeing streaming up. So streaming up on this, you know, same week a year ago, in some cases 70-80% up. Interestingly enough, particularly in the US, where we've seen the launch of a lot of new streaming services in the last 12 months, you know, you see the sort of, let's call them traditional players, the YouTubes, Netflix, Amazons, Hulus of this world, maintaining share, but really there's a growing chunk of that new growth, new volume going to some of the new platforms. Disney Plus comes to mind, of course, with everyone with their kids home. So very much what you would expect, given that we have so many people at home. In audio, there's been an impact, absolutely, because nobody's driving around. So in-car listening, of course, is very, very low. What we are seeing, though, is that while reach is down, average time spent is actually up in some markets. And so that's been an interesting trend as well. But certainly the audio results probably more impacted than TV, which has conversely gone up. And that despite the fact that there's no sports available. So there's some very interesting analyses that we've done across genres. A lot of, needless to say, news, very, very high at the moment. And, you know, a lot of the markets showing that their trusted news source is now television, as opposed to in the past, perhaps, you know, other forms. So I think that's overall, right? We are seeing that across all of our markets, not anyone in particular. The minute they go into lockdown, that's what we're seeing. And that's probably what I should preface all of my comments about, right, is that spanning across sort of 40-odd markets, a lot of my remarks and comments about the impact of COVID is that we've seen them come in as markets have gone into lockdown, as markets have been impacted, right? So our first markets were South Korea and Italy, that were particularly audience measurement, strong audience measurement markets for us, because in China, although the lockdown went into place a lot earlier, for us that's just a very strong digital market. And it was actually, for us, very fortuitous, because we have taken the playbooks out of South Korea and Italy and the lessons learned, and been able to then react a lot quicker as the virus has spread. So, I mean, operationally from our perspective, we've pretty much been meeting every day on this since mid third week of February, I think it was, that we kicked off a daily call with all of the operational leaders around the world and talked through how we manage it. Now, in some cases, we were ahead of any lockdown, and in others, we were not. So where we were surprised, where governments had been not particularly sharing information about impact, where our local team still felt that it was safe to be on the ground, we may not have been as well prepared. And that's part of our resilience now, is, of course, where we were able to go into controlled lockdown, get everybody at home, move, you know, literally infrastructure into people's homes, equip technicians with spare equipment. We've been able to be much more resilient, whereas other markets that had a shock lockdown within 24 hours, we've been perhaps a little bit less resilient.
And I suppose the picture across all these markets in relation to advertising spend is pretty much the same.
We are seeing a drop in volume. So again, just from a timing perspective, our spend numbers are a little bit behind the curve. But in terms of pure volume, which is of course what we're collecting every single day, we are seeing an overall drop in volume. Primarily tourism, auto, IT infrastructure services, professional services down. Obviously, government, media and entertainment is up. Pharma, as one would expect, is up. FMCG seems to be pretty stable. But we are definitely seeing volumes down. And yeah. Initial indications of the data coming out is that obviously also CPMs are down.
Sure.
And on both fronts, is there any indication whether this is a sustained impact? Is there any, you know, for some of your earlier markets you mentioned, are TV viewing levels coming back down to normal? So it's pretty sustained.
It's been sustained, yeah, through the lockdowns, yes.
The other interesting thing that's emerging is a change in the shape of viewing. I mean, in terms of, you know, not necessarily where prime time is and where it starts. And I know particularly on radio in the UK, some of the breakfast shows have been moved back an hour and a half now and actually start at 8:30 rather than 7 because they figure people aren't in their cars or commuting. Has there been any insights on the shape of people's viewing?
The shape of the day is all over the place, quite frankly. As I said, I mean, you know, in many markets, daytime viewing is up 40-50%. So, and how much of that is driven in, it's again, market by market, how much of that is being driven by educational programs? Because a number of countries have actually put their full schooling systems online, you know, is part of what's driving that. So, but yeah. There doesn't seem to be much difference these days, Richard, between daytime and prime time anymore. Mm. And one of the other interesting things actually that we're seeing is while overall digital consumption is up, right, when we look at our DCR and DAR products, a lot of that growth is actually coming from desktop as opposed to mobile. Mm. So what you're also seeing there is that, you know, again, it's not, people are not kind of out and about and on their mobile phones consuming their digital data. They're actually doing that off their desktops at home. And one of the other insights, of course, is that streaming is a very sustained, it's now almost equal across all age groups. So whereas we always saw propensity for streaming in the younger age groups, we're actually now seeing across the board. Now that was a trend that was happening anyway, right? And we've just seen an increase in that over the last 4 to 5 weeks.
It'd be good to understand some of the measures that you have been putting in place to ensure continuity, and in particular, you know, some of the challenges around, I know some of the currencies we've spoken to have highlighted the issue that whilst they can effectively, the beauty of electronic panels is you can keep going, there is a concern long term over replacing panel homes because getting technicians into the home, and also panel balance in terms of recruitment. Right. Now, obviously, you're using presumably a variety of different recruitment and establishment survey methods across countries. But are there any conclusions you can draw so far about the best ways of dealing with this crisis?
Yeah, look, I think that most companies, not even just in the research sector, strangely enough, we didn't have a pandemic plan, but we did have hurricane, earthquake, natural disaster type business continuity plans, which we dusted off and amended. And I think that was for us probably, again, having seen what was happening in Korea and Italy, it was something that we probably were able to jump on a little bit earlier than others. And got those plans in place. So that's the first thing that we were able to plan quite quickly. Not to say it wasn't a scramble. We, for a lot of our services, you know, you've got to think about the fact that we've been particularly in things like at Intel and in TAM and even across our Gracenote business, we tend not to be laptop empowered. And so we did have a massive move with our infrastructure teams in terms of getting people home and able to work from home. I think the count in India was close to 4,500 FTEs moved home, which I think is a massive effort. We do see today, though, some of the problems with that, of course, is just the fact that bandwidth is just not available, right? Or it's much, much slower. So one of the things we are contending with, which is a direct impact, is delivery SLAs, where we've had to negotiate with clients that data might be coming out an hour later, and it's really just got to do with infrastructure in a country. So those would be in some of the countries that are perhaps less evolved, let's say, than others in terms of infrastructure. In terms of the resiliency of our actual panels, though, again, very different from market to market, depending on the technology we have in some markets. But I will say that we are yet to, and I will touch wood as I say that, see any panel go below the agreed NTABs for those panels. So what we have been able to do, and this is part of the sort of positive and the opportunities around this crisis, is, you know, for a long time, there were a couple of sacred cows in our business that we were never prepared to go and actually challenge. Mm-hmm. And we've been forced to challenge them. And just how much maintenance you can actually do without going into a home is one of them. So remote maintenance, what we're calling proximity visits, which don't require us to actually be inside a home or deal with a panelist, have been very successful. Now, I do caution on those, because one of the other things we're seeing is, you know, everybody's locked down and they've got nothing else to do. So A, we know where they are, and B, they really don't have anything else to do. And so they're very, very happy to take a call from a panel management person or from a technician, and they're super helpful, right? We've literally had, panel homes installing meters via Skype calls, leaving some disinfected equipment on their porch, and they're moving forward and doing that. Mm. So that kind of engagement, those, the contact rates and the engagement levels that we're seeing are incredibly high, and we can't expect those to continue over time, but they certainly are able to maintain us at the moment at above all of our current KPIs around the world. We have a process which is called STORMY, mainly because it was a methodology that we actually developed after Hurricane Katrina, that we have ready to go for any markets that fall below in tabs on a particular day. We've yet to have to implement that. And so that's good. And here I'm talking, let's remember that some countries like Italy and like South Korea have been on lockdown for some time. So we do think we've have a much higher resiliency than we probably imagined that we had.
Is that some form of modeling, or effectively data augmentation or hair thickening?
Exactly. Yeah, but we've not had to implement that in any of our markets yet.
You mentioned sort of some of the holy cows that this is starting to challenge, and obviously one of them being around technician visits. I guess the other one is around, and this does vary hugely from country to country, the long-term prospects for face-to-face interviewing, mm-hmm. face-to-face recruitment, or particularly in-home recruitment. Have you got any feeling for, I guess it's a two-part question really. A, clearly at the moment face-to-face interviewing isn't going on, so that has challenges for face-to-face field work, so largely having to be either furloughed or in some cases they're self-employed, so it's quite a complicated situation. Mm-hmm. And then going forward, is this more likely to make the transition to online and telephone recruitment even more acceptable?
I think, look, again, market by market, it will be different. We have, as you said, we've shut down. We have a product called CMV through Asia, which is largely face-to-face. In some of those markets, we are looking to do some caddy and some online just to augment these current phases. And then we will go back to the clients and we can, at that point, we'll have data. And again, we're in a live test bed, right? Mm. And take the data and go and make those decisions with clients. We have got one market where very specifically, given the contraction in the market, the clients have actually come to us and said, can we please just move online, into the future? So we're currently scoping that out for those clients. So I think it'll be different. I think though that, again, this challenges us to do things in a different way, right? Face-to-face. This is face-to-face. So in a future world, is there an opportunity for us to be doing some face-to-face work via things like Zoom? Mm. So again, it's about building resiliency, right? So we are absolutely, the great thing is after having scrambled and built our contingency planning, we're now building our resiliency planning. And that's about what does back to work look like? And what does we really do believe that just as we have incredibly high contact rates right now, people are going to be very, very reluctant around the world to let strangers into their homes. Mm-hmm. in the future. And so, you know, does that mean that our recruiters or our technicians have to be dressed in hazmat suits? Or is there another way of doing this? And part of that is, how do we leverage more technology to do an interview as we're doing now, as opposed to actually sitting on somebody's couch with a cup of coffee in our hand, right? So we're looking at and thinking through all of those opportunities that are being offered to us through this.
I mean, presumably there is going to be a big, big uptick in the number of people who are now able to be contacted via video link that weren't. Yeah, there's been a, you know, Zoom has gone from, I think, 5 million users to 100 million users in 4 weeks. And that's presented certain technological problems. I'm not totally convinced they were completely ready for it, but the in terms of being able to talk people through things by video link that might make some aspects of self-install that people have shied away from up to now much more practical. We've been being part of the company that inherited the Arbitron system, you'll know that right from the start the portable meters were always posted out and installed at home. You can envisage a future where that sort of thing becomes more acceptable, but also technically more capable of being. It's I think there's some aspects of this that are going to stay in place effectively.
Fact, I mean, our audio in tabs in the States right now at historically high levels. And we are actually in the market just outside the States. We're looking to kick off a mailable meter trial. And look, I think this is one of the things that this has taught us, right, is that, and as I spoke a little bit earlier about the different levels of resiliency in markets based on the technology that we've got. I mean, one of the things that has come out of this is that our more modern technology is withstanding all of this. And that for me is, you know, a great sort of confidence tick for the future, because it just means that we can start to look at doing more of this. We have to move into a lower touch world. We've known that for a long time, right? And that's all around contact rates and recruitment rates and just people, you know, use of time. They don't want people in their homes all the time bothering them every second day. So when I say it's, you know, I'll tell you, we still have a number of contracts around the world that we have to guarantee a minimum number of technical visits a year. And it's those sorts of sacred cows that I say we now as an industry can challenge, because while it may have been appropriate 10 years ago to say to your supplier, you have to visit the panel home, you know, X amount of times a year in order to ensure that everything is working well, we're proving out that we don't need to do that anymore. And we all know that the fewer times you bother the family, the longer they are likely to stay within the panel and be engaged. So again, live test bed.
It's interesting, because one of the things that cropped up in some conversations I've been having is a concern. I mean, obviously you're stating some of these aspects as a positive, and rightly so, that we're getting learnings about how we can work more efficiently. There is some concern that if we emerge from this into, you know, severe economic problems, particularly in the advertising industry, and the advertising industry does fund a fair proportion of, not exclusively. I think when we've talked, Brian Fuhrer has talked about how, in some way, the balance of Nielsen's business has shifted slightly from the East Coast to the West Coast, you know, in terms of content production, but. Nonetheless, advertising is key. And if there's an advertising crisis for revenue, then will there be a temptation for clients, A, to try and remain on a war footing in terms of cutting corners on the quality of the services? And secondly, will this inhibit the ability to develop new solutions, because there may not be the funding for some of the innovations around router meters and things that a lot of countries are investing in?
So I think I would like to think that it's not so much cutting corners, right? I think that what if we're proving out that with more modern metering equipment, we are able to do more without going into a panel home, that's not hitting quality, right? If we're able to move a portion of face-to-face interviews into Zoom type meetings, I don't see that that's a quality issue. So in fact, I see them as positives for the quality. So I think that it's incumbent upon us as service providers to, coming out of this, properly evaluate, understand what the implications are, both in terms of the longer term and in terms of cost, and have those conversations. Do I think, unfortunately, yes, if there is a downturn, innovation will go down, right? It's a simple thing. If there's no funding to innovate, then we will see a drop in innovation. But I think that is across all industries, right? Crisis, though, has proven out. I think there's been a sort of a leapfrog in terms of technology. So again, it's going to be incumbent upon us to see how we can harness that for a highly, you know, quality, sustainable future.
I think we're going to face an interesting, as an industry, we're going to face an interesting challenge, dilemma, catch 22, depending on whether you want to call it status a positive or a negative, which is, as we emerge from this, on the one hand, there will be pressures to save money, not perhaps delay innovations, whilst advertising spend hopefully gets back to normal. Hopefully it will eventually. On the other hand, it may well be that this crisis has greatly accelerated the use of new forms, digital television devices, people being even more digital than they were before they entered it, which is going to need those innovations in order to keep the services able to, just literally a meter on a TV set has been the heart of what we do, but even more pressure on solutions like router meters to be introduced. So there's going to be, on the one hand, an imperative to measure all this new behavior, but on the other hand, getting the funding in place to do it will be even more of a challenge.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I funding is always a challenge for innovation.
I guess the final question would be, how's this affecting Nielsen's other areas of activity, such as custom research, ADEX, and retail tracking? I hear that retail tracking seems to be in a pretty similar position to the TV panels, but obviously custom research must be having its own challenge in terms of sort of custom research for clients. Mm.
Yeah, look, I think that custom research, again, depending on your methodology. So it's, you know, any study that is based on face-to-face is a challenge. And so even when it comes to retail tracking, you know, there are some markets with a very high traditional trade that have probably been more challenged than others with a high scan market. So, you know, I think that that's across the research business as a whole, is that everybody who has some form of in-person requirement to collect their data is under some challenge. Yeah. Specifically in our ad intel business, and that is probably the area where we can now look for some really huge transformation, because again, that sacred cow was always, that was a business that had to be done from an office. You know, that coding work all had to be done in-house, et cetera. And, you know, we're proving that out now, not to say that, you know, those are the teams that are highly impacted with bandwidth issues. And we have some countries where it's literally taking a coder sort of 40% more time to code the same amount of data. But earlier I made reference to, you know, the huge operation that we did in India. Now in India, you have to remember we have a hub for our sports business, a global hub for our sports business, a very large hub for our Gracenote business. And enabling all of those teams who had always just had to come into an office on a shift type basis to work from home, again, offers us an opportunity there of, you know, why would we bring people into an office for a weekend shift in the future? So there is, again, I do see a lot of opportunity coming out of here. I have challenged our data science team, though, to try and layer it into all the assumptions that I'm making, just what the impact of this very high engagement and contact rate is having on the, I don't want to skew the data and go and promise a whole new way, a whole new world of working, and then find that, you know, people don't want us phoning them or contacting them or getting them to help us out in the future.
I think that, how interesting, Tony, I think this has been a really interesting interview, because there are a lot of people, I think, who are feeling at the moment that, you know, are at the end of all of this, are we ever going to get back to normal? Whereas in fact, what we should be thinking is maybe we should take the opportunity of this crisis to sort of not think of going back to the new normal, or rather embracing the opportunities, maybe dealing with a few sacred cows and addressing those and moving on to a whole different game.
Honestly, and we are being challenged. I mean, that is exactly our CEO's response, right? The first draft of the back to work guidelines we sent him, he came back and said, these reflect going back to everything that we did before. Go and do some more work, right? And that is the challenge here, is society is not going to go back to the way it was before. And I know, Richard, you made reference to, you know, after 9/11, we all said we wouldn't travel anymore, and we were all back on aeroplanes before you knew it. But I think it's also incumbent upon us. We think about how much of our work requires us to be in somebody's home. And think about the fact that, you know, I reckon at least for the next 18 months, I'm going to not necessarily want, you know, technicians coming into my home. So I just think that it's a case of once you've been doing something in a different way for 18 months, I think it's got to stick, right? Now, again, we can't have longer term impact. So it's all very well and good for us to say, right, you know, this year, we're obviously not going to fulfill the minimum number of face-to-face establishment survey interviews we've got to do. We'll do a combination of some caddy, we'll do some Zoom, we'll do whatever we can. Does that mean that next year we can do half the number of establishment surveys that we normally do? Probably not, right? There's a very good basis generally in every country for why we do the number of interviews that we do. They meet the panel recruitment needs, they meet the universe estimate needs. But again, could we maybe just not be doing those with people getting into cars and driving to people's homes and sitting on their couch and having a cup of tea with them while they ask them questions?
I mean, it might be, just to expand on that, it might be that the impact of this is to effectively flip what the default is. Yeah, we've lived in a world, you know, it's been pretty similar since the 40s or 50s, where the default is you work in an office unless you get permission to work from home. Now it may well be that flips to, you know, what do you need to be in an office to do your job? Justify why you need to be in an office with other people. And then similarly, you know, it might be the default now is that we only go into someone's home for research purposes or interview them face to face if there is no other way, as opposed to the default being to, you know, do normal interviewing unless you can't get hold of someone. It may flip.
Look, and for me, it's been really interesting that, as I said, this is a live test bed, right? So in one of the countries where we had a particular methodological standard that I had never particularly agreed with, and have had, you know, fairly lengthy debates and discussions and almost arguments with my colleagues in data science about that in that country. You know, literally one of the very first business continuity meetings we were in, it was like, flip the switch on that one. And I was like, oh, so it only took a pandemic for me to get what I wanted, you know? Okay, had I known a year ago when I started arguing with you on this one? So, you know, that was kind of a little bit of humor right at the beginning when we looked at resiliency.
I guess final question, how obviously you're in contact with all your staff around the world, how are they coping with the crisis? I mean, obviously it's not just a business challenge, it's affecting them on a personal level, people they may know as well. How are you finding that challenge?
I would say that, you know, it kind of, at the beginning, it all felt like it was a big adventure. And we were all getting used to this new way of working. We were also very busy, right? We were very task focused. So it was kind of just, we've got to guarantee business continuity. We've got to organize to get, you know, whatever, 50 desktops into people's homes. We need to, and one of the great things, and this is something that I really don't want to lose coming out of this, is what we saw is that as you just lower the guardrails a little bit around all of your standard operating procedures, you know, we tend to be very prescriptive with all of our teams because we have standard operating procedures that are global. And as we allowed people to just lower the guardrails in that, the innovation, the creativity that came out, right throughout the organization was amazing. So most of the SOPs around our, what we're calling, you know, remote maintenance and proximity visits has actually come from field techs themselves saying, like, hold on a second, let me try this. Oh, it works. Oh, let me go and tell my colleagues in, 40 other countries that this is working for me. And that's been very, very heartwarming to see. I have noticed, and I would say that by the end of last week, it's less charming, right? Mm-hmm. We've all met one another's children by now. We know which dogs bark. Everyone's a little bit more cabin feverish. And so I think that we're going to have to kind of rethink a little bit of what we do around getting everybody's energy levels back up again. I think, that Friday night, Friday afternoon coffee drinks Zoom meeting is, Friday night happy hour drinks is not enough to sustain people. So I do think it's starting to impact now.
Mm. It's new way of working. I know some people have been complaining to me, not in our industry, that they've just swapped being in meetings all day in an office to being in Zoom meetings all day. Some of it is that societal need for reassurance, that they want to be exposed to other people. But equally, I think some things will settle down into, people getting an idea of how this all works gradually. But it's fascinating at the moment.
There is a lot of work to be done, right? Because on top of managing business continuity and your business resilience and worrying about how you're going to get back to some sort of level of normalcy, you've got BAU, right? Not much has stopped. So I think one of the challenges, and this is what I've kind of keep trying to counsel my teams on, is you need to find the time because we're all at home. And so we're just we're at home and we don't have other things impacting our time, unless you happen to be stuck at home with 3 or 4 children under the age of 10. It's about also making sure that honestly, it's become pretty normal to have video conferences on Saturdays at the moment, on Sundays, and that's got to stop.
Yeah.
We actually need to carve back and allow people to take their personal downtime again.